President Obama has a new plan to help struggling homeowners.
So the question is, will it work?
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It is Monday, October 24th.
Coming up, we'll hear about President Obama's latest economic proposal and those of his Republican opponents.
We'll get the latest on Europe and hear someone in Tunisia, the first of the Arab Spring countries to head to the polls.
And what's the difference between a big bank and a little bank?
Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Vast Conference, conference calls that give you clarity, professionalism, and flexibility all at a low price. For two Vast Conference calls free with no commitment, go to vastconference.com, promo code Marketplace.
President Obama is in Nevada today, where 60% of homeowners are underwater. They owe more on their mortgages than their homes are worth, and the president is expected to unveil plans to help those underwater homeowners refinance at a lower rate. Here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
The White House wants more people to be able to take advantage of the Home Affordable Refinance Program, or HARP. The president himself unveiled the program in early 2009, but HARP never took off. The Wall Street Journal reports the rules for HARP will be changed, eliminating limits on just how far underwater you can be to qualify. You still have to have a job and be current on your loan, but you won't have to go through an appraisal process, and loan fees for some borrowers will be dropped. Mark Zandi is chief economist at Moody's Analytics. He says the revamping of HARP is a small step towards stabilizing the housing market.
We're not going to find a magic bullet, so we've got to string together a number of these kinds of things that when you add it up, they make a difference. And so this is a very positive step, but we've got to take a lot more steps like this.
Zandi estimates that if interest rates stay low, the changes being announced today could lead to more than a million additional refinanced loans. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Let's get reaction now from Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas. She's with us from New York, as she is every Monday. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us, first of all, how would this help the average homeowner deal with their being underwater on their mortgage?
Well, so it's not necessarily targeted at the average homeowner, but just those that owe more than their house is worth. So then they currently have mortgage rates above the prevailing rate, and they'll be allowed to refinance down to these lower mortgage rates. Therefore, their housing payment goes down, and they've got more money to spend. And so it helps their economic situation potentially meaningfully.
And big picture, does this help the housing market in a big way?
Well, not necessarily. So if you think about the number of homeowners that will actually be helped by this, again, for these individual households, it will be quite meaningful. But that only adds up to a little bit of purchasing power for the broader economy. So one, that doesn't mean a huge boost to the economy. Number two, there's still a lot of issues in the housing market holding things back, not just these underwater homeowners.
Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas, thanks as always.
It's a pleasure.
Well, while the president campaigns and talks housing in the West, Republican candidates wanting to replace Mr. Obama are touting their own economic plans. But Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan says, lately, the specter of politics has tainted the economic debate. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
So what do you think of all these Republican plans that are floating around?
Well, to call them ridiculous is to give them more credit than they deserve.
Ridiculous. That's a strong word.
Well, all right. There's Herman Cain's 999 plan, which, when you look at it, turns out to be, according to neutral people, a big tax increase for most of America and a cut for, surprise, the higher income people. There are flat tax things that when the details emerge, you'll discover it's the same thing. It's an increase on lower income people and a decrease for higher income people.
And I mean, is it the same on the opposite side? Is it the same for the Democrats, too? Do they always come out with the same kinds of plans?
Well, now they do. President Obama, having sat there and basically wasted 2 years, is now coming out with plans, none of which will be adopted, which everybody knows. It's all political. And this isn't going anywhere. The 999 and flat tax aren't going anywhere. It's all a political statement.
Was it always like this, Alan? Or I mean, decades ago, did candidates run on realistic and I don't know, feasible economic platforms that eventually could happen or would get enacted?
Well, the obvious one would be Reagan, who ran on a plan that seemed ridiculous when he did it. They ran on a tax cut program, but when they were in power, they in fact increased taxes because it was the thing to do. Clinton, if you remember, promised a middle-class tax cut, whatever that meant. Then after he was inaugurated, realized the numbers didn't work and said, well, we're not going to do this. I think there might have been more realism than there is now. And then there was Bush, who actually did what he said he would do and then kept doing it and helped get us into this big hole. It's a wonderful system.
All right. Well, we'll see how all these play out in the election cycle. Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
We'll get earnings today from Netflix. The movie rental company is expected to post a profit, even though it's had a rocky couple of months trying to shift its DVD-by-mail customers to stream video on the internet. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith has more.
Since announcing a fee hike in July, Netflix has seen its share price drop more than 60%, and it shaved 1 million people off of its subscriber projections. Media industry analyst Porter Bibb says the company does have the right idea. About 140 million people watch TV on their computers.
The streaming model that Netflix created, that's going to be the way that we all consume movies and television going forward.
Bibb says the trouble is studios and networks are charging more for their movies and TV shows. That puts the squeeze on Netflix's bottom line. At the same time, the studios and networks are developing rival sites.
Content providers are very likely to set up their own businesses rather than give away the store to third-party streamers.
Bibb says Netflix got to the business early, but it's only a matter of time until content creators figure out a solid online business model to oust the middleman. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Strong earnings this morning from the world's largest heavy machinery company, Caterpillar, saw a 44% jump in quarterly profit and expects sales to rise further next year.
And they're from your neck of the woods, right?
Peoria,
Central
Illinois.
Yeah, absolutely. Health insurance giant Cigna says it's going to buy elder insurer HealthSpring in a near $4 billion deal, helping Cigna get into the Medicare business as the U.S. population gets older.
We've got more earnings, numbers, and more at Marketplace.org.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Vast Conference, the service that gives clarity, professionalism, and flexibility for conference calls at a low price. Vast provides both regular and toll-free numbers so you can set up calls anytime and provides web tools to manage or record calls instantly. Priced at 2.5 cents per minute with no commitments or contracts, try Vast Conference with 2 free calls at vastconference.com, promo code Marketplace. That's vastconference.com, promo code Marketplace.
Now to the Marketplace Global Perspective. All this week, we're going to help you understand why Greece, the epicenter of the European debt crisis, is such a threat to the world's economy.
Over the weekend, leaders in Europe struggled to make progress on a plan that would bolster banks and offer bailout protection for Greece and other countries. And now a Wednesday deadline fast approaches for some sort of definitive plan. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us now from London with the latest on that story. Hey, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
I know this weekend's summit was supposed to be a big deal. Have Eurozone leaders agreed to anything?
Yes, they did agree that Europe's banks need more capital. So if any of the European governments like Greece do default or do restructure their debt, it won't trigger a European banking collapse. The figure that we're hearing, that's the amount of money that will have to be pumped into the bigger European banks, around $150 billion.
So, Stephen, where is that money going to come from?
From the banks themselves. If they haven't got it, they'll turn to their national governments. Only if the governments can't pump in the money will the banks be able to turn to the European Rescue Fund, which is also going to play a crucial role bailing out European governments so they don't default in the first place. Mm. No agreement yet on how this fund is going to be beefed up, but markets seem to believe agreement will be reached by Wednesday. However, Bob McGee of Independent Strategy thinks the markets are getting ahead of themselves. Investors could be disappointed.
What I'm concerned about is that once they start picking through the details, they might feel that this really doesn't match up to the issues, and we're back where we were before. So the optimism that we see in markets at the moment may not last.
And another big worry for markets, investors who bought Greek government bonds are apparently going to be asked to take a 60 cents on the dollar loss. It's going to be bloody.
All right. Marketplace is Stephen Beard in London for us. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
By the way, later today on Marketplace, Kai Ryssdal will be in Athens to explain why Greek debt is not as far from our economy as you might think.
They're counting votes today in Tunisia, the first of the Arab Spring countries to head to the polls. The turnout over the weekend was 90%.
Wow.
That's like even better than Minnesota numbers.
Yeah, what is the average here? Like 55, maybe, in a good year?
I don't know. I know is that Minnesota has the highest voter turnout in the country. Anyway, back to Tunisia. We're going to talk now with Inel Tarfa, who is a 25-year-old business school student in Tunisia. He's with us now from the capital, Tunis. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, this revolution that started in Tunisia started because of economic reasons, to some degree anyway. Do you think that as a result of these elections, that those concerns, those economic concerns, will be addressed?
Well, to be perfectly honest with the results we're seeing so far with Ennahda leading, I don't think it's really that their main concern. Although all parties say we'll improve economics, etc., but I don't really trust them.
You think the party, this moderate Islamic party that is leading, is not going to address those concerns?
Well, not directly, I'd say. They sure will try to appease people, but that won't be their main concern at the long term.
You are a business school student. Do you plan to stay in Tunisia when you're finished with school or leave?
Well, so far I don't really know. I'll have to finish my degree first, and then I'll see if I can have an opportunity outside of Tunisia or not. We'll see. I don't know yet.
Inel Tarfa, 25-year-old business student, joining us from Tunis, Tunisia. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, from Tunisia to Iraq, Jeremy, the news came in Friday that all U.S. troops will come home by the end of the year. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale reports now on what that means for the Federal Treasury and for the Congressional Supercommittee that's trying to find savings in the budget.
The U.S. was spending around $40 billion a year in Iraq. Will the super committee chalk that up as government savings? American University's Gordon Adams says probably.
It's going to be more of an accountant's trick than it is actual savings, but they may choose to do that.
By the way Washington does math, you could do that, yes.
Since the president already promised troops would be out by the end of the year, the Lexington Institute's Dan Garay agrees the savings are just a sleight of hand, especially because Iraq's money will likely be redirected to Afghanistan for increasingly expensive technology, things like unmanned vehicles and robots.
And not until the end of next year, that is 2012, are going to be enough troops out, enough equipment out, that there'll be sort of a net reduction in costs.
But he says that won't prevent congressional budget negotiators from adding $40 billion a year to the savings ledger. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
We've been telling you over the last couple of weeks how the big banks are doing, or at least how they say they're doing.
Yeah.
Some of them, they're shifting around some of their loss reserves to make their profits look a little bit bigger. Well, what about community banks? Several of them will report earnings today. There are more than 7,000 of them. They account for less than 20% of the total bank assets in this country. And by the way, 84 of them have failed so far this year. Yeah. Frank Sorrentino is chairman and CEO of North Jersey Community Bank, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So when I hear community bank, I sort of think of the bank down on the corner that's still in business of making loans to people and businesses and not involved in a bunch of risky stuff. Is that true?
That's pretty much it. Our business plan is very simple. We take in deposits from our local market and we make loans in those same markets to the same people.
And that's a business model that works?
It does. People don't realize this, but there are about 7,800 banks in this country, and about 7,500 of those are community banks.
Are you being helped or hurt by the Fed's extremely low interest rate policy?
Yes. certainly lower interest rates, you know, I think are good for the economy in general to a point. And so they will help people to refinance and be able to take money that they would normally pay in interest and put that money back into the economy. But very low interest rates and for a very prolonged period of time will actually hurt bank earnings capabilities, which if banks don't earn money, they can't grow and make more loans.
The big banks have been in the news a lot in the last couple of weeks about these debit card fees, $5 a month at Bank of America. Are community banks like yours going to have to do the same thing?
No, I don't think they will. What you're seeing the bigger banks do is what they've been doing for the last 30 years, which is some bean counter in some office is looking at a spreadsheet, doing an algorithm, and just figuring out how can we get every single last penny out of every one of our clients. And when it doesn't work out the way they'd like because of regulation, then they will shift and move to accommodate their profit models, not their customer.
But why wouldn't you be doing the same thing? If that's the business model that they feel they need to use, why don't you do that same thing?
Because that's not our business model. Our business model is to take care of our client, and we don't make decisions across the entire country, across an entire product line. Remember, the profit center for us is more customer relationships.
Frank Sorrentino is the chairman and CEO of North Jersey Community Bank. Thanks so much for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
We've heard a lot about money in sports lately, especially with the drama surrounding the NBA lockout. Major League Baseball, the NFL, the NHL, and NBA collectively spend a whole lot of money each year, and only a handful of teams come out victorious. But which teams get the most bang for their buck?
In today's Midday Extra, we talk to Ramesh Ratnasar, deputy editor at Bloomberg Businessweek, about which teams make the best use of the money they spend. Hi, Ramesh.
Hi.
So which teams are doing the best? Who makes the most out of their money?
Well, there are some surprising answers to that question. There are probably some not so surprising answers. But we did an analysis of the last 5 years in all professional sports in North America. And we looked at the payroll data for every team in professional sports, and then we did a breakdown on how they performed on the field and did various things to make sure that we were making apples-to-apples comparisons. And we found that the most efficient team in all of professional sports is the Nashville Predators, the National Hockey League.
Why do you think that is?
If you look at what they've done, they've stayed well below the NHL salary cap, which is $40 million. They have, at the same time, won on a fairly consistent basis. So they've made the playoffs 4 out of 5 seasons that we looked at. And so their average wins per season were about 44.6, which is well above the average for the NHL. And so they're able to win consistently, go to the playoffs, but do it by not spending a lot of money.
That has to be, Ramesh, difficult in doing this kind of research because each league has a different number of games. I know baseball plays 162 games a year, right? And you've got how many games for football? Like 16, you know, games for the NFL. So, I mean, it would be difficult, right?
Right. So we had to basically take the average payrolls and calculate based on the median payroll for each sport, calculate how much money per win each team was spending. And then we did a standard deviation to make sure that we were comparing and each team was being compared against the norm within their respective leagues. But it is difficult to make really precise calculations because every league has different salary regulations, has different salary cap rules, and a lot of teams do all sorts of things to get around those rules.
What is the reason for this? Why did you decide to look into this? What do you think will come out of it?
Well, I think we, in doing this issue, which is devoted entirely to the business of sports, took the approach that basically I think many people now realize that to be successful in sports, you have to look at what you do as a business and in terms of business and use the same sort of analysis that you would bring to running a business, to running a team and to managing your own career. And so we just decided it would be interesting to look and see, well, who's doing it best? Who is making the most out of the money that they're spending? And what we found is that there are some teams that are highly successful, the Indianapolis Colts, the Patriots, the Spurs.
Not this year, they're not.
No, not this year.
After last night's game, that was crazy.
That's true. Well, and that's an interesting point, because this is a team that actually had one, I think, the highest paid player in the NFL, Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning, who's injured this year,
had a relatively low payroll outside of Peyton, but was able to win because they had this great player. Now we're seeing that they've had a low payroll, and there's a reason why they haven't had the players that the other teams do. And without Manning, they're losing pretty much every week.
Well, not pretty much. Every week they're losing. They are
Steve's from Indiana, so this is his baby here.
It's so interesting, you know, and you take a look at at the Colts, and then you look at the Yankees, right? Arguably the most successful franchise of all the sports in history, with how many, like more than two dozen pennants, right? So
right.
So the Yankees, I mean, should they care if that team isn't as efficient as the Nashville Predators or some of these more efficient teams?
Well, I mean, I think it depends. In a lot of ways, what we value in our favorite teams. Obviously, most fans want to see their teams win at any cost. And the Yankees have taken the approach that they will spend the highest dollar to make it to the World Series every year. And what we found is they've actually done pretty well. They've made the playoffs every year but one, I think, of the seasons we looked at. But they also had the highest payroll in professional sports. The question is that sustainable? And I think that is a question that Yankees fans are starting to ask themselves as they look at the contracts that the team has amassed over the last few years. And they could find that over the next few years, they are not nearly as successful on the playing field while they're still saddled with this huge expense of paying these high-priced players.
Ramesh, you know, the most efficient team I can think of is our football team here in Los Angeles, which I think spent no money. spent nothing last year. Ramesh Ratnasar, deputy editor at Bloomberg Business Week, thanks so much for talking with us.
Sure. Thank you, guys.
And finally, today, here's a car for sale, Jeremy, in the Boston area. You lived in Beantown for a little while, didn't
you? Of course,
yes.
Maybe
you could go back there and buy this car. it's a 1978 Chevy Corvette, 25th anniversary edition. Yeah. I remember this car. All original parts, including the new car sticker on the window.
Wow.
They never even took the sticker off the window. The sticker, by the way, was $14,000 and some change.
Wow. That's what it was going for.
That's what it was going for back in 1978. They're going to get much more today, I'm sure. They're asking for more than that. All original parts on this car. The original owner bought the Vet brand new, then drove it into a barn and never used it again. Don't ask me why.
Huh.
Just drove it into a barn. He apparently had a farm and just it sat there. The car has 13 miles on it and some added options, too. A lot of dust from all those years
I
in
bet.
The barn, which, by
it's
the
probably
way—
probably going to be very difficult to clean off, I bet.
Maybe so. Maybe so. They have not cleaned it off. They are selling the car as is. This the guy's name is Corvette Mike in Boston. So maybe you know him. Maybe not.
No.
Okay.
I bet the car guys do. Maybe they know Corvette Mike.
We'll ask. The Malyazzi brothers.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see if they know. Exactly. And not only the dust and all the accoutrements that you would imagine in such a really fancy car, it also comes with a factory-installed CB radio.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Monday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.